I have discovered that when people lose, they don't lose because of competitors. They lose because they beat themselves. If you trip, if you don't make it to the end, usually it's because you've tripped yourself. It's not because somebody else has stuck their leg out there and tripped you. Winning is not an outside deal, it's an inside deal. Let me give you a classic example of it that you can all relate to because it happened in the Olympics. Carl Lewis, 9th gold medal in the long jump. Now let's talk about it for a moment. I saw the interview, I don't know if you saw the interview, after the feat of which they were talking to him, and he readily admitted that there were several of, in fact, he readily admitted that he was surprised, he didn't think he would even probably make it to the finals, and certainly didn't think the gold was going to be probably his, but what's amazing, he said, he admitted, there are other guys who can jump longer than me. Well, then why did you win? He said, well, it's very simple. He said, I have a lot of good experience, I've got gold medals behind me, and he said, I studied the wind, and he talked about all the stuff that's on the inside of him, the way he thought before he jumped, the whole, and when it got done, you know what Carl Lewis was basically saying? He's saying there are probably 4 or 5 guys that can jump longer than me, but I won. And he won because on the inside, Carl Lewis has something that the other jumpers do not possess. And we're going to talk about that. In fact, in a few moments, I'm going to share with you 13 ways to start winning from the inside out. And it's just going to, this is a life-changing lecture. Now, many times when people talk about winning, they ask the wrong questions. In fact, there are two things I hear constantly when people talk about winning, and I want to always jump up, give them a timeout signal and say, wait a minute, this has nothing to do with winning. For example, wrong question number one, what are the conditions? I run into all kinds of people who they'll say, well, before I can say whether I'm going to win or not, what are the conditions? For example, if they're in a sporting event or something like we just talked about, they're going to want to know, is it away? Is the game away or is it at home? Do I have the home field advantage? Or they'll want to say, how's the weather? If it's going to be outside, is the weather, it's going, you know, playing football, is it going to be cold? Is it going to be rainy? In other words, there are a lot of people that are, they base their ability to win on the conditions around them. Or if it's about life itself, they'll say, well, no wonder I'm not winning. You don't understand. I have a bad family background. If you'd have been born when I was born, if you'd have been born where I was born, or if you'd been born to whom I was born to, then you would understand why I can't win. In other words, they are condition-oriented, and they basically say, I have not done this because the conditions won't allow me to do it. Now, does this make sense? Yeah. How many times do we find people limping around basically saying the conditions weren't right? Wrong question. Listen to me, my friend. If you're not winning, it is not because your conditions are wrong. Just remember that. The second wrong question that is many times asked, if they're not asking what are the conditions, the second question they ask all the time is who is the competition? In other words, they're saying, well, no wonder I'm not winning. There are other people out here that are quicker, faster, better, smarter, whatever. And they're always worried about the competition. Now, I've always been an admirer of John Wooden, who was for many years the successful basketball coach for the UCLA Bruins and who probably set a record in college basketball that will not be repeated. And I think he had 8 straight NCAA final championships. I don't imagine anybody ever beating that record. Now let me tell you something interesting about John Wooden, because I've read about as much as I could ever find about his life. In fact, one of my proud possessions, I have a basketball signed by him in my office. John Wooden never scouted the opposition. In fact, well, all the college coaches were always out there with their scouts watching the teams they're going to play down the line. John Wooden didn't even have an official scout for the UCLA Bruins. And they asked him about it. They said, why don't you have somebody checking out these other teams? And John Wooden said, my biggest problem is not the other team. My biggest problem is us. And if I can get us prepared right to play up to our potential, it doesn't matter who we play. You see, winning is an inside job. Always has been, always will be. And for those who are looking for outward conditions or another competitor that's going to come and steal their victory away, I'm here to tell you, you're looking in the wrong place. Now, what I love about this lesson today and why I think it's so effective is this. I'm going to share with you in a minute 13 ways to start winning on the inside. What I love about this lesson is every one of you can do all 13. Now think about it for a moment. I'm not going to give you anything you can't do. I'm not going to put anything so high that you can't reach it. In fact, this lesson is what I call a lower shelf lesson. You can reach up and help yourself if you want to. Now, will you do it? That's your choice. That's not my choice. I'm responsible to you, not for you. I'm responsible to teach you principles that can change your life. Then you're responsible to change your life. I'm not responsible to change your life. Don't make me. I'm responsible to change my life, not yours. Are you with me? Yeah. So what you got to understand, I'm going to lay it out here for you. You can just reach up and you can pick it, and you can do all 13 if you want to. If you want to, you don't have to do any 13. You can lose all your life and wonder why, or what most losers do, blame someone else for your losing. But I'm here to tell you that every one of you can pick this up. Now, here's what else I love about this. Not only can every one of you do what I'm about to share for you to do that will help you become a winner on the inside, which will make you a winner on the outside. And by the way, you know how you become a winner on the outside is by being a winner on the inside. Winning inside is always your first victory. Then you can begin to win outside. So what we always do is we work on the inside before we ever begin to tackle that which is out beyond us or around us. What I love about this lesson is not only can all of you do it, but here's what I love about it. There are some of you that will do it. Now watch this. Some of you are this close to success right now. In fact, you would be absolutely amazed if you knew how close you were to success, and what I'm going to give you in this lesson is going to put some of you over the top. Only thing I ask is when you go over the top, write me a note. Just write me a note. Just say, hey, just went over the top. Thanks, John. You just kind of helped give me a boost. You were kind of the last step on the rung of the ladder I needed to do, because my whole goal in life is to help people go over the top. My whole goal in life is to add value. That's what I do this for. This is what every day I wake up for one purpose and only one purpose, and that is to glorify God and add value to people, and that's the only reason I live. And as long as I do that, I've got a good thing going. And so I'm going to add value to you, and for some of you, this will be the one that will put you over the top. Here we go. 13 ways to start winning on the inside. Number one, be responsible for yourself and your future. I would appeal to you, and I put it number one, maybe not because it's just number one. I put it number one because of its importance to me. To me, the other 12 will never click into place until you can get this one taken care of. Be responsible for yourself and your future. If you do that, you're started on the right path. I have a quote in the notes. Do you see it? The most important ability is responsibility. Nothing happens until someone steps forward and says, "You can count on me." I was reading an interesting article recently about a psychologist who went to a prison, and he was doing a dissertation about people that were in prison. And so he was interviewing them, and he said it was the most revealing interview that he ever had with anybody in his whole life. And he said basically the reason it was so revealing is that as he would ask the prisoners why they were there, he said, "I never had one prisoner look at him in the eye and say, 'I'm here because I messed up and it was my fault.'" He said they all said the same thing. "Well, I was framed. Or I just happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I'm the victim. He said, in fact, he said at the end of his interviewing all these prisoners, he came to the conclusion, and I love this, that he could not find a larger group of innocent people anywhere. So the greatest group of innocent people he's ever met in his life were those that were in prison. Well, you know what the problem is. The problem wasn't what they did. The problem was their unwillingness to accept responsibility for what they did. Because all of us have done things wrong. All of us have made mistakes. All of us have done things stupid. That's never the issue. The issue is we grow up and mature when we begin to take responsibility for who we are and for what we've done. These portables, you know, I pick them up all the time. I picked up so many portables. I'm talking about the little quote books. I pick up so many. Now if I go in a store and I don't have one, they just come to me. It's the most amazing thing I've ever seen. They just fall in my lap because I just... glean from them. I picked up a portable recently that was entitled Lessons I Have Learned, and it was just quotes of people, lessons they had learned through life. And this is from a 25-year-old, and I thought, boy, this is good. Here's what this person said. "I've learned that our background and our circumstances may have influenced who we are, but we are responsible for who we become." Ho, 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 ho. 25-year-olds figure that out. You know, I know a lot of people 50 years old haven't figured that one out yet. In fact, the question is, at what age are we going to figure this out? I mean, you know, what age are we going to figure out that we're the ones responsible for where we are and who we are and what's happening in our life? And it's not, you know, when I used to pastor, I'd counsel people that were in their 40s and 50s, and they're still talking about their parents not diaper training them at the right age. And I'm sitting there, I'm saying, come on, get a grip on your life. When are we responsible? Now, classic example, I went up to see Joel Porter Friday. So I get to the airport, get there about 6:30, want to take a taxi straight to the convention center. So I get in line. There's this huge long line of people waiting for the taxi. So I look at the line, and as always, when there's a line, I ask myself, what's the problem here? What's the problem? And I looked up, and I found what the problem was. Where I was standing in line, I stayed in the line for a while because I didn't want to lose my place because the line was getting longer at the moment. So I'm standing in line, so I'm craning my neck to say, okay, what's the problem? We've got a long line here. And I saw it. Clear down at the end was a place where the taxi cabs come out, and there was an arm that would be down, and they would put some money in the arm, and it would go up, and it would let one taxi out at a time. And then it goes back down, and the next cab driver's looking for his change, and and it goes up. And I'm watching this probably for 3 to 5 minutes, which is about as long as I can watch anything without changing it and getting involved. So I finally looked at the guy behind me. I said, would you mind holding my place here in line? You just remember, look at his face. This is where I'm supposed to be. I'm going to do my best to help them out here. So I go up clear to the front of the line, and there's a guy that waves them on. Not only do they have to wait for the arm to raise, but then they have a designated person that says it's okay to come. So I thought, well, I'll start with him. He looks like the obvious choice. I said, can I make a suggestion? He looked at me, said, not really. I said, do you see this line? Well, yes, I see this line. I said, could I give you a suggestion that would help get rid of the line? He said, that's not my problem. I said, that's not your problem. Then I said, could I ask you a question? Whose problem is that? Well, he said, it's your problem. You're the one in line. Now, I realized that I now had a major problem. We understand. The problem now is not the little lever that lets the taxi. It's not even the $1.50 that I found out they had to put in. It's the guy here. Well, I went to two others that had uniforms that told me that they were probably somewhere working. And none of them took responsibility. So I go back to the first guy and I said, I'll give you $30 if you'll just let 20 taxi cabs just come on and pick us all up and take us to where we need to go. He said, we can't do that. Every taxi cab driver has to put his own $1.50 in. And he said, we don't call one from around the parking lot until that one has put his $1.50 in. He said, when the lever lifts, he says, there's a bell that rings that tells the next taxi cab driver he can come around. I tell you, some perfectionist who wanted everything looking good designed that system. So the next thing I said when I realized I was getting nowhere with this guy because he took no responsibility, the other two, nobody took responsibility, is I said, could you give me a card where I can write to somebody that has responsibility so that I can explain the system, give them an improvement on it, and tell them they need to change it? So he said, yes. He said, I hand out a lot of these cards. And so I said, in fact, don't only give me one. I said, give me 50. So I got a whole stack of cards and went down. Everybody stand in line. I said, please fill this out and send this in. Please fill this out and send this in. Please. And so I waited for another 20 minutes before I finally got my one taxi cab after the lever had lifted. The bell had rung. He'd put his $1.50 in. He slid up and I got him a taxi and off I went. Now we got a problem. You know what the problem is? No responsibility. Everybody else was willing to let somebody else take this thing and say, well, it's not my problem. Now that's exactly what we're talking about. And I put in your notes, because I believe with all my heart, the best helping hand that you will ever find is at the end of your own arm. Take responsibility for your life. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If you're unwilling to do number one, I got good news for you. You can turn this sucker off because you're already a loser. You have been a loser. You are a loser. You will be a loser. Just turn the tape off and lose. That's just a thought. It's just a thought. Because if you won't take responsibility for yourself, the next 12 won't help you because you'll find an excuse for every one of them. Number one is grow up, get a life, take responsibility. If not, don't listen to the tape. You don't need this tape. You can lose on your own. Number two, listen and learn from other successful people. If you want to win, what you got to do is you got to get your eyes open and your ears ready to hear and hang around people that have already been successful and find out how they did it. It's not an accident that God gave us one mouth and two ears. When we fail to listen, we shut off fully half of our learning potential. I saw the other day a story of a little boy who's playing checkers with his grandpa. And his grandpa kept winning in checkers. And the little boy, he's complaining. He says, Grandpa, he said, you always win. You always win. And Grandpa said, well, you don't want me to lose on purpose, do you? He said, if I lost on purpose, you'd never learn anything. And the little kid says, but I don't want to learn anything. I just want to win. Now, I'll tell you something. I know people every day of their life, they don't want to learn anything. They just want to win. They haven't caught on yet that there's a relationship between learning something and winning. And so therefore, what they're trying to do every day is take shortcuts. Every day they're trying to get by some easy way. All they really want to do is, you know what? They want to stand on the stand and collect a gold medal without paying a price. And one of the first things you and I have to learn, if we're going to learn about winning on the inside, is we got to hang around with people that are successful. And we got to, you know what we need to do? We need to keep our mouth shut and get a legal pad with a pen. And we need to ask questions, and we need to observe. People are not successful by accident. If you find out the key to their life, it'll help you to find out the key to your life also. Now, when you go hang around these successful people, here's what you look for, here's what you listen for. Look for, number one, commitment. Because these are qualities you're going to see that these people excel in. Number two, excellence. Number three, integrity. These are things, I'm just giving you little things to begin to look for, so when you listen, they'll come out and jump out at you. Number four is their time management. They are great managers of time if they're very successful. Number five, their attitude. They'll have a terrific attitude. Number six is relationships. They excel because they excel in relationships. Number seven is priorities. Look for these things when you interview these people. Number eight, solid family values. Most of the people that stay on top are people that have had solid family values in their life. Number nine, energy. Ask them where they got their energy. Number 10 is peace in their life, a sense of deep peace. Let me give you a classic example of that. We were down in Orlando for a wonderful meeting, a life-changing meeting for me. During the day, as I'm getting all these people networked in this room, of which when we came that morning, I was the only one that knew everybody in the room, and it was my joy to watch these heavyweights start networking. And David Burdine spoke that morning about the fact that he had a major business, major corporation that was in trouble, and that 25 years ago, that God had given him the gift of peace. And there was every person in that room was just kind of migrated emotionally to that statement that God had given him the gift of peace. Now, we're having dinner. 10 hours later, we're having dinner, just enjoying ourselves. Coach Mack of Promise Keepers, used to coach Colorado, looks over at David Burdine and says, David, I want you to talk to me about that gift of peace. I want you to tell me about that, and then I want you to pray for me that God will give me that gift of peace. Okay, you know, what I want you to see is this. Coach Mack saw that there was a guy that had something that he'd like to have a greater dimension of. And he listened, he learned, and he asked. Now, all I'm saying is, we've got all kind of examples all around us that you can learn from. What I have found a long time ago is most people, when they get around successful people, they pick up their idiosyncrasies, not their strengths. That's why I listed 10 things to look for so that you know what to look for when you are around these people, because I promise you they have a majority of these. Number three, the third thing we have to do to win on the inside is love what you do and do it. If you want to be successful in life, you got to love what you do. Confucius said, choose a job you love and you'll never have to work a day in your life. Katharine Graham said, to love what you do and feel that it matters, how could anything be more fun? Dr. Charles Mayo put on his office wall this motto, there is no fun like work. Thomas Edison said, I never did a day's work in my life. It was all fun. Now, what I'm saying is love your work. In fact, I love it because one evening Thomas Edison came home and his wife, of course, if you read about Thomas Edison, again, he's one of my favorite people to read after. He was a workaholic. He just lived for his invention. But his wife said, you've got to take a break. She said, I want you to go somewhere that you just want to go and love to go and spend a week. He thought about it for a moment and said, okay, sweetheart, I will. Of course, you know what happened. 5 o'clock the next morning, he's at work. She comes in and says, I told you to go somewhere you love. He said, this is it. This is what I love. Well, you see, what happened to Thomas Edison, what needs to happen in your life is this. Very simple. He loved what he did. And if you love what you do, it's not work. I mean, I work long hours, but I've never worked a day in my life. When I do these lessons, do you think this is work? Do you think this? I mean, I'm sitting there with my legal pad, and I'm writing, and I'm creating, and I'm having so much fun. I mean, I'm wanting to call people on the phone and do the lesson while I'm creating it. You think this is work? Do you think this is work? This isn't work. This is life. If you don't love what you're doing, quit. I mean, let's talk about how to win on the inside. I'm trying to set you up. See, let me tell you something. Many of you, you're programmed for failure. You're programmed for failure because every day you hate what you do. Now, I think life is too short to every day hate what you do. It just seems to me that you got to sit down somewhere and say, okay, what is it that I really want to do? I'm absolutely amazed at the people that every day life is a drag because they do things that they really don't care to do. To me, you ought to sit down and figure out what do you love to do, and whatever you love to do, give everything to it. I mean, I don't mean this wrong. Get doing something that you love. Do something that just turns your crank. In your notes, first find something you like to do so much that you'd gladly do it for nothing. Then learn to do it so well, people are happy to pay you for it. That's the way it always works. You know what I find? It's the other way around. You know what most people want to do? They want to get paid, and they say, if you pay me enough, I may love it. Give me enough benefits, and I may love it. You know what I learned a long time ago? You can never make a person that's unhappy happy by giving them more. You never improve their lot by that. Now, interesting research. It's in your notes. It's a little long, but it's worth our time. One team of researchers followed a group of 1,500 people over a period of 20 years, and at the outset of the study, the participation was divided into two groups, Group A, Group B. Group A, 83% of the sample, was composed of people who were embarking on a career path that they had chosen solely for the prospect of making money now in order to do what they wanted later on in their life. Group B, the other 17% of the sample, consists of people who had chosen their career path so that they could do what they wanted to do now and worry about the money later. Now watch this. The data showed some startling revelations. At the end of a 20-year period, 101 of the 1,500 people had become millionaires. Of the millionaires, all but one, 100 out of 101, were from Group B, the group that had chosen to pursue what they loved. I believe when you pursue what you love, all the other things will begin to follow afterwards if you'll just pursue what you want. Now, I got another incredible survey. A recent Harris poll found some surprising stats. 63% of the workers polled believed that very few people work as hard as they did 10 years ago. 78% said workers today take less pride in the work they did 10 years ago. 69% thought workmanship in America today was inferior to what it was 10 years ago. 73% believed that workers were less motivated today than they were 10 years ago. Reminds me of Henry Luce, who was the founder of Time magazine, who said one time, millions of people, Americans, are not working, but thank God they've still got their jobs. Okay. Now here we are. It's just a thought. Now, these findings shouldn't surprise anybody, nor should it surprise you that America's alone among the industrialized nations of the world to decrease its industrial output in the last 10 years, the only one. In another poll, only 16% responding said that they were doing the best job they could at work, and 84% said they could do better and work harder. Many said they could even be twice as effective if they wished. Why do people feel this way? Here we are. Low morale equals low productivity. When the morale is low, so is the output. And that is so very true. Andy Granatelli was right. So when you're making a success of something, it's not work, it's a way of life. You enjoy yourself because you're making a contribution to the world. Number four. If you want to win on the inside, number four, learn from your mistakes. William Singleton, co-owner of Media News Group, was right when he said, too many people, when they make a mistake, just keep stubbornly plowing along and end up repeating the same mistakes. He said, I believe in the motto, try and try again. But the way I read it, it says, try, then stop and think, then try again. Hello, anybody home? How many times there are some people, they literally get an A in perseverance. They just flunk IQ. You just love the fact that they're determined. You just wish they would think once in a while. They just keep hitting their head in the same wall, and they keep making the same mistake again. Number five, don't try to be perfect. If you're going to win on the inside, the first thing you got to do is deal with the perfectionism issue. Now, the closest a person ever comes to perfect is when he fills out a job application. Huh? Makes us all liars, doesn't it? Huh? Haven't you seen these job applications before and then see that 6 months later you've got this person that you hired? And you say, there's something missing in this picture. You know what? Well, truth is what's missing in the picture. Okay. Now, there are some problems with perfectionism that we need to talk about just briefly. I'm not talking about excellence. I'm not talking about doing your best. I'm talking about something that's totally different than that. I'm going to explain the difference because excellence is very important. You ought to do the very best you can. I'm not talking about sloppiness. I'm not talking about jumping in and not thinking. I'm not talking about any of that. I'm talking about perfectionism, which when taken to its top degree, paralyzes you and me and keeps us from ever becoming successful. Now watch this. Problems with perfectionism, number one, it keeps us from being creative. You have never known a person that has the disease of perfectionism that was highly creative. And the reason why is that the messiness of creativity will never allow them to get beyond those boundaries. Number two, it keeps us from getting started. Perfectionism keeps a person from getting started. You show me a perfectionist, and I'll show you a person that doesn't know how to get going. And you know why? Because they're always waiting for the perfect answer. They're waiting for the perfect idea. They're waiting for the perfect suggestion. And Cardinal John Henry Newman was right when he said, nothing would get done at all if a man waited until he could do something so well that no one could find fault with that. And let me say something about perfectionists. Most of the time, not all the time, but most of the time, perfectionists are perfectionists because they're worried about somebody else picking apart what they're doing. And that's a whole different other area of dysfunction we don't have time to talk about today. Number three, the third problem with perfectionism is it keeps us from being productive. Kettering was right when he said, keep on going, and the chances are you will stumble onto something perhaps when you least expect it. I never heard of anyone stumbling onto something sitting down. Number four, the fourth problem of perfectionism, it distracts us from our purpose. A perfectionist has a hard time focusing on the overall picture because they get to see the minute details so much. It's like the college librarian who was one day, who just kind of normally had a scowl on her face, kind of a grumpy old lady. But one day she was just smiling and somebody came and started coming to the library and she was smiling and said, oh, you're so happy. I've never seen you happy before. Oh, she said, it's because there's only one book out and I'm going to get it right now. See, I learned a long time ago, perfectionists, they forget what the purpose is because they want everything to be just right. That librarian forgot that the purpose of the library was to get books out. I mean, that's the whole purpose. I mean, what's a library for? Very simple question, to provide books. You know what she thought? She got so excited because she said, I'm going to go get the one book that's out, put it back in place, and everything will be in order. That's what happens with people with perfectionism. They get off of the main purpose. Number five, the fifth problem with perfectionism, it's not attainable. And this is what I always say when I see people striving that way. I'm saying, you know, Salvador Dali was exactly right when he said, have no fear of perfection, you'll never reach it. And number six, the problem with perfectionism is, it leaves you disappointed, and I guarantee that. Kennedy was right when he said a lot of disappointed people have been left standing on the street corner waiting for the bus marked perfection. It has a disappointing feel to it. Okay, winning on the inside, sixth thing you need to do to win on the inside is change now before you must. I love these people come up and say, John, do you think I should change? And I said, well, you're going to. The question is, do you do it voluntarily on the front end, or do we drag you through that process? You know, you will change. Life doesn't wait for people that will not change. So the question is not, are you going to change? The question is, are you going to be on the front end and make money off of it and be creative because of it and make life changes, or are you going to be on the back end, huh? It'd be like the guy who was 100 years old. He was in Maine, and a newspaper reporter from New York City went up to interview him on his 100th birthday, and he was sitting on the porch in a swing, and he said, I bet you've seen a lot of changes in your lifetime, haven't you? And the old man's got his arms crossed and his jaws jutted out there. He said, yes, sir. And he said, I'm again every one of them. I know all kind of people. Their whole life has been just exactly like that. Now, here, all I'm saying is, if you want to win, change now before you must. Change equals either growth if we do it readily, or grief if we do it reluctantly. And that's a fact. I love the Dallas Cowboys when the Dallas Cowboys really were America's finest team. And I don't care for the Cowboys now. But there was a day, remember? Roger Staubach, come on now. Tom Landry, good all-American boys. I loved him then. Tex Schramm used to be the president of the Dallas Cowboys. Look what he said. Because remember, they went into a major losing season, and that's why, of course, there was major change. Explaining why they had losing seasons almost after 25 years of success, he said, "We didn't react quickly enough to our failures. I think it is too easy to get caught up in our own success. We didn't know when to change." I want to tell you something. I have found that people will change quicker if they're in failure than they will if they're in success. But I have found that if you don't change while you're successful, I promise you, it is the downward trend to becoming unsuccessful. This constant ability to keep on changing. Let me illustrate that today. I brought two books with me. And this will illustrate everything I need to say about change very quickly, and I can go on to number 7. The first book that I have in me is entitled, and this is a book I got in 1972. I've had this book for a long, long time. This book is called America's Fastest Growing Churches. In fact, I bought this in 1972. And in it, it has the names and the stories of 12 churches in America that were the fastest growing churches in all of America. Now, here's the reason I brought the book is not because of that. Let me tell you why I brought the book. All 12 of these churches that in 1972 were the fastest, most dynamic, growing, exciting churches in America, not one of them is growing today. In fact, some of them are out of existence. Some of them, they ain't anymore. The fastest, the best, the biggest, the top, the one everybody pointed to. Why? I can tell you exactly why. I could go through this whole list because I know these people. What they did is they found something that brought them success, and they got on that horse, and they said, I'm going to ride this baby. And I want to tell you something. If you ride the horse without every once in a while stopping, giving it some fresh water, some food, and changing, that horse will die. And here's what I learned a long time ago. When the horse is dead, dismount. It's not a brilliant thought, but it's a thought. And how many times do I watch people on dead horses and they haven't dismounted? And you want to walk up and say, "It's dead. You're dead. We're all dead. The organization's dead." Why? They were unwilling to change. Now, the reason I brought this book, America's Fastest Growing Churches, when I was still pastor in Skyline Wesleyan Church, Dr. Towns wrote a book called The 10 of Today's Most Innovative Churches. Now, here's what's interesting. If you go into this book, you're going to find chapter 1 is about me. I mean, my staff, when this book came out and went all over the country, they were so proud. They were getting books mounted in the rooms. You know what I mean? They were so proud. And I saw this stinking pride. And so one day I had to tell them a story. I brought this book in and said, "Let me tell you about the fastest growing churches in America 20 years ago. They are no longer." I said, "If the odds are as they always are, somebody 20 years from now will be holding up this book." Hello. And they'll say, "Let me tell you about Skyline Wesleyan Church. It used to be. Now, why did the 20 years ago these churches not no longer fast growing? It's very simple. They refused to stay ahead of change. You see, can I tell you something? A leader is to be a change agent. If you read my book, Developing the Leader Within You, I have a whole chapter that says the acid test of any leader is the ability to create positive change within that organization. That's what leaders do. Leaders are change agents, not change resistors. And many, many times I see people lose on the outside because I want to tell you something, they haven't changed on the inside. I would hope that all of us today are not the same person we were a year ago. And I hope that all of us a year from now will not be the same person we are today. Make sense? Number seven. Deliver what you promise. If you want to win on the inside, become a person that delivers what you promise. This is simple. By the way, all this stuff I'm giving to you, every one of us can do this. Let me ask you a question. Let's take a poll. Can all of us be responsible for our life? Yes or no? Yes. Absolutely. Can all of us deliver what we promise? Yes. Now, I'm going to tell you, if you can't deliver it, don't promise it. I see this happening all the time. Now, I'll tell you what happens when you don't deliver what you promise. Without integrity, there is no trust. Without trust, there is no confidence. Without confidence, there is no leadership. And without leadership, there is no progress. Take it to the bank. There are two kinds of people. It's in your notes. Do you see it? Those who do and those who might. An action succeeds. A promise is honored. A commitment is kept only at the moment of completion. When you do what you say you will do, you follow through. There is no maybe, no unfulfilled words. Others know where you stand and learn to count on you. In following through, you gain control, a power born of responsibility and the satisfaction of a job well done. I only stopped long enough for you to reflect. Because I promise you, the moment you do not deliver what you tell people you're going to deliver for them, they'll never trust you. And you don't want that to happen in your life. Now, what's that mean? I don't know. That may mean don't promise anything until you know you can deliver it. One time, going to Nova Scotia, my plane was canceled out of Detroit, and I had to call ahead and tell them I could not be there that night, but I'd be there the next morning in all of my traveling. I want to tell you something. When you think of John Maxwell, don't think of brilliance. Don't think of creativity. Don't think of somebody that just has that goes into this room with his legal pad and comes up with all this stuff. You know what you think of when you think of John? Here's what you think of John Maxwell. Day in, day out. Day in, day out. Day in, day out. Never changes. I'm so boring. Always deliver. Always deliver. The greatest disrespect a leader ever gives his or her people is to start leading them and not finish the job. If you're going to take them on a trip, take them home all the way. Or else don't offer the trip to them. Deliver what you promise. Number 8, don't make excuses. If you're going to win on the inside, get rid of all the excuses you've ever had in life. And I want to tell you right now, we could all sit down and give excuses for every reason why we haven't, didn't, couldn't, shouldn't, wouldn't. Isn't that right? In fact, if we want to, I could stop the tape right now and we could have a pity poor me party. We could just talk and you know what? The first liar doesn't have a chance. Because when I tell my story, you got a bigger story and you got a worse story. And in an hour, we'll all jump out the window here. We can all get ourselves in a blue funk. Can I tell you something? Every person I've ever met that has ever been successful could give you 27 reasons why they couldn't have made it. When I was in Bermuda doing the Chick-fil-A National Conference, I listened to Truett Cathy for 1 hour talk about all the difficulties he had in going in starting the business. The very first year he had the business, his restaurant burned down. Second year he lost his brother in an airplane crash that was his partner. I mean, he talked about his financial, just time out. And I'm sitting there before Truett Cathy speaks, and everybody's looking at this founder, this owner, this multimillionaire, this godly, great leader. And they're looking at this guy, and they're saying, well, boy, if I could have just started Chick-fil-A when Truett started it, then I could have all this money. No, can I tell you something? Truett Cathy went through all kind of adversity. When I was in Dallas, Texas recently, doing Home Interiors Conference, their national conference for all their managers, and I sat down there, and I began to talk about Mary Crowley. And as I began to talk to those 700 managers of that huge operation, I looked at them and I said, let me tell you something about Mary Crowley. The very first year that she was in the business, she almost lost the business because she needed to come up with $6,000 that she didn't have for the business. In that first year, she found out she had cancer. In that first year, JFK was assassinated and Dallas had a stigma on it for 5 years. She had every reason why that business could not go. Got cancer, you don't have enough money, and you got a stigma on your town. She went to the top. Here's what I learned a long time ago. Marriages that stay together aren't marriages that have less problems. Business guys who go to the top aren't business people who had less problems. They're people that understand that you just do it and quit making excuses. This is so simple. And I want to tell you something. If you've got a bunch of excuses, the good news is you don't need to talk to me because I don't listen to them. Don't tell me about your labor pain. Just give me the baby. Don't show me the scars. Just show me if you won the war. Come on. Get right down to it. Now, here's all I'm saying is quit making excuses because we all have them. Isn't that right? I saw in Charlie Brown the other day. I love it. Charlie Brown was talking to his manager. And his manager said, I've compiled the statistics of our baseball team this past season. In 12 games, we almost scored a run. in 9 of the other teams almost didn't score before the first out. And in right field, Lucy almost caught 3 fly balls, and we almost once made the right play. Upon hearing the report, Charlie Brown concluded, "We lead the league in almost." I know all kinds of people lead the league in almost. Put it behind you. We all have reasons why we haven't, couldn't, shouldn't, and didn't. Now, fix it. Number 9. This fits right after 8 real good. Get control of your life. Get control of your life. Losers say, "I wish," and winners say, "I will." Now, let me help you get control of your life for a moment. I love this. Any caller would, wouldn't they, huh? Let me help you get control of your life. People lose control of their life in time more than the other area. If you can control your time, you can control your life. And I put down here Alec McKenzie's 10 top time eaters. Crisis management, telephone interruptions, lack of objectives, priorities planning, attempting too much, drop-in visitors, ineffective delegation, personal disorganization, lack of self-discipline, inability to say no, procrastination. Now, just take a moment with your own pen, not talking to me. Circle your top 2 time wasters. I mean, your own. I've got mine, too. I've circled 2. I know what my 2 are. Huh? Mine is number 4, attempting too much, and number 9, inability to say no. Those are my 2 greatest weaknesses in time management. Huh? Fortunately, they're not Margaret, so we're okay, aren't they? Huh? But Linda could have given those to you. Now, what I'm saying is, you've got to know yourself. Where do you have the problem with your time the most? You just sit there and be honest with yourself and get control of your time. If you can get control of your time, you usually can get control of your life. That's what I'm saying. Number 10, work what I call can't see hours. Now, I got this idea. This isn't mine. This is from a guy named Bill Rosenberg, who's the Dunkin' Donuts founder. He said, "Start work when it's too dark, you can't see, and finish when you can't see because it's dark again." Now, am I saying work all the time? No, here's what I'm saying. There is a relationship between your willingness to put in extra hours and the extra things of life that you get. Now, in working smart, it's very key. In fact, in one of my dad's conversations while he was out with me this time, I said, "Dad," I said, "let me tell you something." And I think this would be true. Linda, my assistant's here, and Dennis, our marketing guy's here. I think it would be true that anybody could go by our offices from 5 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock at night and find cars in the parking lot for people working. Wouldn't that be true, Linda? On any day. On any day. They understand something. They understand that there's a direct relationship between what you put in and what you get out. Now, when I say work can't see hours, you don't have to work in the middle of the night. In fact, I don't do very good at night. In fact, I very seldom do any writing or any creative work after 9 because I shut down mentally about that time. I'm not a good night person. I'm a good morning person, but not a good night person as far as creativity. Here's what I'm saying. When I say can't see hours, it doesn't have to be early in the morning, late night. I'll tell you what it can mean. Is when you're on an airplane, what do you do? Do you read a novel or look out and see the clouds and see if you can find a ducky formation in the clouds? Or do you line your work up and get some work done? By the time I go from San Diego to Dallas, there have been people sitting right beside me who haven't had one thought the whole trip. I'm serious. You know, their biggest request is, could they have one more Diet Cola to drink? You know what I'm saying? Or peanuts. You got some peanuts. That's the biggest thought they've had. And by the time I land in Dallas, I've knocked out a lesson. Both of us will go our own way, never to meet again. One guy wonders why one guy's successful, one guy's not. It's very simple. In the time that you got, we all got the same amount of time. That isn't the issue. People say, "Well, I wish I had more time." Can I tell you something? Quit wishing it. You'll never get it. We only get 24 hours. What I wish is not you had more time. What I wish for you is that you would do more with the time that you have. And it's a discipline in our life. Number 11, plan and prioritize. If you want to win on the outside, you win on the inside and plan, prioritize. And this is going to get real practical now. Things which matter most must never be at the mercy of things that matter least. There are 2 essential areas to plan and prioritize in your life, and I'm going to talk about both of them, and I'm going to show you how I do it, and hopefully this will get real practical, and hopefully it will give you something that you can get your hands around. Here we are. The two essentials in your life that you've got to plan and prioritize, number one is work, and number two is personal growth. So what I did is I'm going to try to do my best to help you to understand how I prioritize these two areas. For example, my work. Basically, you prioritize your work. Now, let me just stop here for a moment. Here's what I'm saying is you got X amount of things to do. You got to put them on a paper, and you got to say, okay, what of all the 12 things I got to do, what's number one, what's number two? Now, it's so simple. In other words, you list on the paper your priorities as far as your workload. We all have them. Then, two, put a timeline on them. Let me just pull this out for you because I want to show you something. I have with me, this is my schedule up to 8/13, August the 13th. Every bit of my priorities are right on this piece of paper. Life is so simple, I'm embarrassed to even bring this back to you. But this is how you get work done. What you do is you prioritize your work. Then I set, with every one of these things I've got to do, I have a timeline on it. For example, to do a lesson like this, it takes me about 12 hours to do a lesson like this. So I have it blocked right there. On 7/26, I did this lesson. I had this blocked at the 1st of June. What you do is you prioritize your workload, and then you put a timeline on it so that you always have it in front of you. I mean, this sits at my desk every day so that I'm there working at my desk so that I'm looking at it all the time, and I know whether I'm behind or I'm ahead. In fact, I'll tell you right now, I'm about a day and a half behind right now. I'm in a little bit of trouble. Okay, now, you prioritize your work, you put a timeline on it, you put it in the calendar, make folders of every work project you have, make folders of every potential work project you're going to have. Before a trip, because many of you travel, gather material for your next work project. Take it with you. And take the next work project with you. It's so simple, it's going to be embarrassing. I'll go Thursday morning, I'm going to go to Atlanta. In my briefcase will be no less than 6 folders of work that I need to get done. And I'll wait for the moments when I have it. I'll do it on the plane there and on the plane back, and I'll find the little times when I can just get aside. But the moment, see, here's what I found a long time ago. How many times do we have 30 minutes? I'm talking about 30 minutes. We don't have 5 hours. We have 30 minutes. Here's what you do. I can guarantee you, if you do not know where you're going, you'll waste those 30 minutes. But I don't waste my 30 minutes because I'll tell you what, I go in and get my next folder. I already have my work laid out. I can mentally in 30 seconds get started because I've already laid out what I need to get done. It's just a simple way to learn how to work effectively. You don't have to work longer. You just have to work smarter. Now, let me talk to you about growth for a second. Growth is not an automatic process. Now, I listen to 7 tapes a week. In fact, this is really embarrassing. Here are my 7 tapes. These are the tapes in my car. They have a rubber band around them because what happens is if you would go to my desk right now in my office at my house, you would find that I have 50 to 60 tapes on the left-hand corner of my desk, all of them in piles of 7 with a rubber band around them. This will work if you can count to 7 and you have rubber bands. That is the problem. Boy, I knew it. I don't have rubber bands. If I'd have just had those rubber bands. Now, this is so silly. It's embarrassing. I'm not trying to talk down. Please understand. I'm trying to communicate and help you. But I'm not, because this is kind of elementary. But I'm going to tell you what. The reason it's elementary is because I have to keep it elementary. I'm not real smart. So what I have to do is I have to keep everything in my life very simple. And what I do is every week that I'm home, because I listen to these all in my car, listen to all my tapes in the car. What I do is every week I pick up another one of these 7. Put them down. If you go to my car, right there, right below the left part of the door, is a place where those 7 tapes are. And I just literally pull them out, stick them in, and I listen to 7 tapes during a week. And it's not very, 7 tapes, 5 hours. That's, if you're driving 5 hours in the car, you can knock out 7 tapes a week. Now, I try to do 1 book a week. I try to file every day of my life. I can tell you without hesitation, I never break that rule. Every day of my life, I file. Every day of my life, I find something and categorize it. Find it and categorize it. One great principle I try to put every week, and I try to write a little bit every day. They asked Chuck Swindoll one time, and said, how can you do so many books? It's very simple. I spend 1 hour every morning. I get up early. 1 hour a day provides all the books I ever write. 1 hour every day. Just think, if you can squeeze 1 hour. Now, for you, it's not writing. For you, maybe it's making appointments. I don't know what it is, but whatever your you know, you've got to prioritize your list. I'm not here to do that. I'm just saying, if you prioritize your list, put timelines on it, then all of a sudden you'll begin to see how this works and how this comes together. Number 12, believe in yourself, your mission, and others. When you begin to have a strong belief in who you are, in where you're going, what you're doing with others. Jack Okun was right, founder of MCI. He said, it doesn't matter how many times you fail in trying to get something to work, all you need is one success. Well, what is it that keeps you coming back? It's that strong, high belief in yourself. Belief is more than something that a person possesses. Belief is something that possesses a person. That's why if I have to talk you into the belief, I know you haven't got it yet. Because when you got it, you know what you'll do? You'll try to talk me into your belief. And there's a world of difference. That's where we become zealous for what we teach or what we believe. On this point of believing in yourself, I was very fortunate, as all of you know, to have tremendous parents. And I was talking to Dad, and Dad said something that was unbelievable. He said, John, he said, as long as it was moral or legal, and as long as it was right, he said, I never one time in my life told you kids that you couldn't do something. I always believed in you and believed in you reaching your potential. He said, I never consciously put a limit on what you were, what you could become. Well, what I'm saying is that's a strong belief in ourselves, strong belief in those that we work with. And I love the leadership line that says, it's wonderful when the people believe in the leader, but it's even more wonderful when the leader believes in the people. How true that is. Number 13. Give more to others than they expect. Learned a long time ago, Lewis Stevenson was right when he said, don't judge each day by the harvest you reap, but by the seeds that you plant. It's a dangerous thing to judge your day by what you've received. You know what? I'm always putting money in the bank, and I'm not talking about dollars in the bank, although that's a good idea too. I mean, I'm talking about putting relationships in the bank. I'm every day I'm saying, okay, if I added value to people, how many seeds did I sow that down the road will come back unbelievable? So too many times we want to reap the harvest. And you know what? The most ridiculous thing is people who want to reap a harvest haven't planted anything in it. I even learned that what really spoils some people is they go out and reap somebody else's harvest. And you know what happens? Then they think it comes easy. And then, you know what the rest of their life do? They sit waiting for the harvest to come again. And they wonder why it never did. There are five types of people. Number one, the type that never invest. They expect to collect. They complain. They're the complainers of life. They never invest, but they expect to collect somewhere, and then they complain when their boat doesn't come in. Number two is they never invest, and they don't expect to collect. They just suffer. Then there are those who start to invest, and they want to collect now. Have you known people like that? I'll tell you what they do. They quit. Because they find that the law of life won't allow that to happen. I'm on five types of people. You see how this works? There are those who never invest, but they expect to collect, and they complain. There are those who never invest, and they don't expect to collect, and they suffer. There are those who start to invest, and they want to collect now. They quit. There are those who continually invest, and they want to collect later. They win. But then there are those who strategically invest, and they will collect big. And what they received is they compound their winnings. Strategically invest in people and in your time. Okay, gang. Let's take a moment and let's look quickly at the 13 ways to start winning. Do you see them? I want you to go through every one of these and say, okay, I haven't, I can, I will, or I have. I mean, you're in one of those four areas. Be responsible for my future. And as I go through them, think about it. You can control every one of those. Listen and learn from successful people. Love what you do and do it. Learn from your mistakes. Don't try to be perfect. Change now before you must. Deliver what you promise. Don't make excuses. Get control of my life. Work can't see hours. Plan and prioritize. Believe in yourself, your mission, and others. And give more to others than they expect. 13 things. If you do those 13 things, if you get lined up on the inside, the outside will take care of itself.